Well, is there anybody out there who doesn't like pie? Do you make your own pies? Or does making pie crust intimidate you? Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Holidays come with lots of traditions, and one of my favorites is a visit from Paul Novak. He is not only an expert baker, he's also a talented instructor. We'll be talking about making pastry crusts today, among other things, and maybe talk about pie crust. We'll zero in on that a little bit, too. You ever have trouble making pie crust? I'd love to hear from you. And I hope you'll give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Or you can leave a question or comment on our Facebook page. Just look for the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. Paul Novak, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Larry.
Why is pie crust so intimidating to home bakers?
Partly because it takes practice, I think.
Yeah?
It took me a while to figure it out, and I'm not saying I'm great at it, but
I bet you part of
it was practice.
And what are the let's get right into it. What are the basics for making a good crust?
Well, the first thing would be, what kind of flour do you use?
Okay.
And here I'm going to have a lot of opinions today, but I'll try to back them up. In the past, people would have used pastry flour for their pie crusts. That is hard to do.
Yeah.
To use all-purpose, though, there's more taste in soft wheat, which is what is in pastry flour. So I've progressed to now being able to do half pastry, half all-purpose. But commercial places that don't use pastry flour, I wonder if you're a professional, you should be doing it right. So anyways, think about incorporating some pastry flour. It'll change the proportions a bit, and again, it'll take some practice. And if you doubt that it tastes better, use pastry flour for your pancakes and waffles. I can almost guarantee you will then understand why pastry flour tastes better. Okay. And then the next thing would be, what kind of fat do you use?
Okay.
And the traditional one in America would be lard. If you have a French background, you know, I use butter in my quiche dough, but in my pastries for pies, I will use lard. And some people use half and half. I've experimented now with duck fat. You can buy that. I've tried suet. You can use coconut oil because it's semi-solid. And just one more thing about lard, there's also leaf lard, which is the superior kind.
Okay.
And you can get that. Metcalf's has it. You'll be surprised. The inexpensive stuff is a pound for, you know, $1 or $2. The other is going to cost you $10 to $15 for a container. But it's
worth it.
It's worth it because it's a different consistency. It's harder. It's just plain different.
Should you chill your crust before you bake?
That's one of the things I've learned that really helps. Meaning, essentially what you're doing is taking some flour, cutting in your shortening, your fat. And I don't like to say shortening because I'd never use Crisco. It's a swear word. But anyways, you'd cut that in. You'd have a little salt in it. You'd add a little water. And here some people put in a little vodka, a little vinegar. I mean,
yeah.
Do you put baking powder into your... There are all these variations. But then essentially you mix that together. And yes, then it's advisable to put it in the refrigerator for at least an hour to chill it, and then roll it out.
And do the crust recipes change depending on what you're putting into them?
For me, no. If I'm making any fruit pie, I'm going to use the same recipe. But I've been playing with it over the years. You know, and again, I use all lard. Somebody else is half butter, half lard. I use the two different kinds of lard, the good kind and the less good kind, you know. But
and I'm wondering too, you know, you've got pie tins, then I've got these really nice glass pie
Yeah, I
tins except they're glass.
The Pyrex, yeah, I use the Pyrex usually, but there are also sometimes if you have a lot of apples, you have need a bigger container, so there are ceramic, enameled, stoneware, you know, those all work. You can use metal. I mean, you can use it'll might change your bake time or your temperature, but yeah, lots of variables there too.
Yeah, I wondered about the baking time. If you've got one of these glass or Pyrex pipe. Plates or pie tin. I hate to call them tins. Or no, what's the proper word for a glass?
It would be a dish, pie dish, or
pie dish.
Yes. So, what a common technique though is to put it in for 10-15 minutes at a high temperature and then bring it down.
Okay.
And that's one way you know, because people worry about the soggy crusts. If you're watching the great British baking show, which is Wisconsin Public Television, so I can mention
yeah,
that.
You bet.
They always worry about the soggy bottom. And that's that is something to be, you know, concerned about in a sense. Here's where some people would do a blind bake. They would bake the crust first. That's what I do with quiche. And then you finish it off later.
Yeah. Soggy bottoms have never bothered me. I kind of like them once in a while.
It would depend on your oven. Have you calibrated your oven? You know, this is where the practice comes in. You know, changing your flour, changing your pan, you know, Pyrex versus metal. Yeah.
They're all factors that come into play. Let's put it that way. Paul Novak, our guest today. And you brought me something. What am I? Oh, look at this. It's stolen.
I'm pretty sure it's my mother's recipe. A stolen's an interesting thing because at least this recipe, you cut in the shortening like you would be doing with a pie crust, but it also has yeast and it has more and egg yolks, and it's not very sweet. It does not have very much sugar in it at all, but it's got half a cup, therefore a stick of butter, and half a cup of lard. And I use both lards too, so there's three kinds of shortenings in there. And then insides are the egg whites with just, you know, cinnamon sugar.
Man, is it good. Well,
and I also should say to people, I used wet yeast. I wanted to do really the old-fashioned recipe. And so there's two ounces of the fresh yeast in there. And put in cinnamon, nutmeg, a little mace, and a little what's called cassia buds. So four different related...
I'm telling you, and then a little butter on top.
Oh yes, and it's yes, and Wisconsin organic cultured butter. Yes,
it is delicious. Helen in West Salem. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. Well, I'm just so thrilled that you have somebody on that uses lard in their pie crust. I have seen so many recipes out there where they don't, and it's the best shortening you can ever have. And another thing I wanted to say was when I was a kid, my mother made pie crust, but she made it as if it was scary, and she didn't want to handle it very much. Well, then I had a summer job working with a cook who said, you don't have to worry about it. Handle it, because it'll be tender. And so that's what I've done ever since. And it rolls out good, and I always use ice water. That helps. So anyway, I appreciate this, Larry, that you got somebody on that uses lard in the pie crust.
Ellen, thanks a lot for calling.
And I should have said, typically the water that you put in would be ice water or cold water.
Yeah.
And your lard and your butter, or whatever you're using, is also chilled. It's not sitting out at room temperature. So you are cutting it in. It's not melting in. And then you put it back in the refrigerator. So it's part of it is keeping it cool.
Yeah.
And the thing about working it.
Yeah,
is
what
that
about this working it too much?
If you know the instructions for waffles and pancakes, it's that don't mix it too much because you don't want to develop the gluten. You don't want it to be tough. Well, this is the advantage of using pastry flour. It's got less gluten. You could work it more and not worry. Whereas all-purpose, somebody could work it too much and get a tough, not a flaky pie dough. But maybe they like it to be tough.
I've got to make my pancakes with pastry.
Yes, you do.
Flour. I've been using all-purpose.
Yeah, there's a difference. It's a different wheat variety, soft wheat.
I am going to get some paste. I don't even have any. I don't think I've got any pastry flour in my cupboard even.
It's helpful to know that in the past, stores would have sold pastry flour and bread flour, and cake flour.
Yeah.
All-purpose was created later, so they wouldn't have to have as many varieties on the shelf, really. And fewer people were making bread, so they were compromising. But you can still get pastry flour, bread flour, cake flour. Different gluten.
Do you think people there, we've sort of come back that we have more people baking bread?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
It seems so to me.
Yeah. When we get to pizza, then I'll have some opinions about pizza, too.
We've got some opinions on pizza coming up from Paul Novak. Oh, man. I hope you'll join in here as we move along. You have some questions about baking breads or making crusts. I'd also like to hear about the types of holiday breads that you grew up with. I'm telling you, I just had a delicious bite here from a stolen that Paul Novak made. And we'd love to hear from you, so give us a call. The number's 1-800-642-1234. You can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org, or feel free to post up on our Facebook page. Just look for the Larry Mueller Show. We'll take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store. We'll be back. Thank you for joining us today on the Ideas Network. We're visiting today with Paul Novak, baking instructor, author of A Baker's Dozen of Daily Breads and More. I'm Larry Mueller, by the way. Thank you. Thanks again for joining us as we take a look at holiday baking. We've talked about mastering pie crust. We want to get into pizza crust as well. But there is almost no question in the baking area that we can't that Paul can't take a crack at. And I'm not
good at all of it. I know I'm good at some things, but I know about most of it.
And Mary in Duluth, Minnesota has a comment right off the bat, so let's go there. Hi, Mary. Mary, are you there? No, I'm not hearing Mary. Oh, darn. Let's go to James in Elkhorn. Hi, James.
Oh, how are you today?
Great. Appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, my family's been making what we think it's a Bohemian sweetbread called Hoska. I've never actually met any other friend or neighbor or anyone else who's heard of it before. So I'm wondering if where this comes from. Is it truly an ethnic bread? Are we doing it right?
I do not know that kind of bread, but there are so many different holiday breads from different cultures. Meaning, what was the old Yugoslavia had half a dozen different cultures within one country, and
yeah, what's this bread like, James?
It's a braided sweet bread. So really, it's just a bunch of flour and butter, and then you throw in some nutmeg, and it's a process though with a couple times of letting it rise and braiding it in a stack of beautiful braids, and then. As our own family has branched out, some people do an egg wash, some don't. Some put raisins in, some don't. And yeah, I'd like to know what's the right way to do it.
Are there eggs in it?
There are.
Okay, that's what I would have guessed, yes. Mm. So oftentimes Christmas breads were celebrations of various ingredients, even more so the Easter breads, but still, yeah. Hopefully you had some butter, you had some eggs, you had some sugar, and depending on how you wanted to go, like this Stollen has hardly any sugar, but it's got a lot of fat in it. And some people put in raisins, and some people put in dried fruits, which I don't do. But in a sense, there is not probably a right way to do it. Think of it that way. Think of it as variations. And I'm sure you can go and find somewhere an old cookbook that has an original recipe. But if you do it differently, great.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, we'll be doing it in just a couple days here.
Well, good for you, James. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. Connie in Hartford has something for us. Hi,
Hi,
Connie.
Hi, how are you guys?
Great, appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
I'm wondering, has he ever worked with einkorn flour?
Yes, I've gotten einkorn flour. I've used emmer, I've used farro, I've used spelt. So there's the old wheat varieties.
Right.
And some of them you'll get whole grain, and some of them, like spelt, you can get whole grain spelt or white spelt.
Okay.
I can't remember the emmer that I had. And it has a somewhat different texture, but it's got gluten in it.
I probably
didn't use 100% einkorn, but a lot of it.
Well, I've been using it because of the gluten situation. I have a low tolerance, but I am not, you know, celiac or anything.
Yeah.
But it is different when you're using it. We had to change a lot of things. We did all the European cooking, baking this last year, and we had to change the fat content of everything a little bit. But it's good once you're used
yes.
to using it.
Yeah, and see if you can find emmer, which is another old variety.
Okay.
And when you look up farro, it's going to be very confusing because there are different kinds of farro.
Oh, okay.
One farro is actually going to be einkorn, and one might be emmer, and one might be spelt. So different cultures use different names, and it's a little bit sloppy, I would say.
in that way.
But they're all worth trying, and even if they might have gluten, but it might be a different kind of gluten, but some people react to the carbohydrates in various wheats.
Oh, okay.
So some people can handle spelt because of the different carbohydrates.
Oh.
So I'm just saying this is, again, complicated for people.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this does work for us. So
yeah.
Do you use more fat then when you're...
No, less. 20%
less. Fat.
Less.
20% less.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in terms of fat, the Stolon is a lot. But other things, I will put in unsweetened applesauce instead of the oil in a recipe. And that works just fine. Try that in a banana bread, which typically has a huge amount of oil. You know, do
with
half.
The einkorn, I know they say that I've gotten the recipe book from Jovial, and I've talked to them several times, too, because, you know, there's always things that you have to ask. But at any rate, she mentioned that it has to be what you said before, something that is a solid. You know, so it's got to be your lard, your butter, or your coconut oil.
Sure.
So that's what I've done.
All right. Well, good for you.
You had used it. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Connie. Thanks a lot for calling.
And clearly, I encourage people to use different flours and different fats and different. You can go get into different sugars. I mean, you can use agave instead of honey or. The possibilities are immense. Yes.
Jan in Vilas County. Hi, thank you for calling.
Well, good morning. Excuse me. I just came home and got just the last few minutes before noon, and you were talking about pastry flour. And is that the same then as cake flour, or is that wholly different again?
They are different. Cake flour usually comes in a box. It's usually expensive. It's got even less gluten than pastry flour, but it's also often very finely ground, almost like a powder. So it's usually used just for cakes, but pastry flour can be used for pie crust and waffles and pancakes.
Okay, and pastry flour has less gluten, you said, than
all-purpose.
Than all-purpose flour. So if I wanted to make, like you were talking about, pancakes or something, could I use cake flour for that?
Sure.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's just a little different texture. And for pancakes, I encourage people to use all kinds of, you know, flours, too. And oat flour in pancakes is wonderful. The Paul Hollywood book, he has a British baking book. He's the fellow on the British baking show on Wisconsin Public TV.
Uh-huh.
Has a oat pancake recipe that has no eggs and mostly oats, ground up oatmeal or oat flour, and it's just wonderful. So I have great respect for him.
Okay, no, well, I'm going to have to look for places to get that up here, I guess. Okay.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Should be available in Vilas County, I've got to believe. I would ask for it in my local grocery store. They'll order it for you. David in Chautauqua, your turn. Hi, David.
Hey, hello. Hi. I just have a memory of both sets of grandparents were Norwegians, but my dad's folks were both born in Norway and came over as young teenagers. My grandmother, we were farmers, it was such a process to take that lard, that fat, and render it into lard, and then they used that for everything. And the taste was incredible. Her donuts were amazing. Her pies were incredible. Her rosettes at Christmas time, all the Scandinavian sweets at Christmas. Well, oh, gosh, I'll never forget it. And she made a hash with the rest over after rendering the lard, mixed in with the chopped up sirloin.
Oh, you mean like cracklings and...
The cracklings, yes.
Yep. Oh yes. Wow, you're making me envious.
Well, it was a mess. You know, I was a little 10, 12, 11-year-old boy and watching this with huge eyes sitting there. And,
yeah.
Oh, I'll never... My grandmother was a great cook, but boy, she was... Anytime she took something to a church social, everybody would say, well, what did Berta make? Oh, Berta. And all the men... But, it'd be gone because all the men would grab her food.
Well, no question. Homemade lard coming from probably a pig that was well cared for would be just superior quality of lard.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, great memories, David. Thank you for calling.
You bet. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you as well.
And people should know that leaf lard comes from a specific part of the pig. What happens with probably most... lard is that they just take all the fat and sort of render it down. But leaf lard is coming from a specific part of the pig, I think near the kidneys. And so it's a high quality right off the bat. And I think it's called leaf lard because it probably looks like it's in layers in, you know, sheath in the actual pig. And there would be less work to create that, but it's just part of the pig.
David, thanks again. Nancy in Grafton, it's your turn. Hi, Nancy.
Oh, hello. Yeah, I grew up on a farm, too, and when my mom got killed when I was 14 years old, I had to take over. So I learned how to bake right early and make lard and all those kind of things. And I just wanted to know, I make this rich Christmas Stollen. It comes from an old electric company cookbook. It is the best doggone recipe, and a lot of people want it. I got to make my third batch now. But what I wanted to know was, first of all, you can't get compressed yeast around here anyway. And the second thing is about scalding milk. They say you should scald the milk and then let it go down to lukewarm. But if this is milk from that's been, you know, pasteurized and everything that you get in a gallon jug.
Yeah.
Why do you have to scald it?
You don't. It's an old...
I decided that myself.
It made sense in the past because somebody might have had milk that just came right from the cow. You were worried about microbes or whatnot. Mm-hmm. It was that there were enzymes in the milk that would affect your baking.
Yep.
And the pasteurization process, in a sense, denatures those enzymes. So if you use any pasteurized milk, you don't have to scald it. But if you got milk right from the cow, not pasteurized...
Then you scald it.
Yeah, but not because it's, you know, worry about contamination. It's just it has to do with the enzymes in it.
Well, that's not going to happen. I don't have any cows here.
No. But I'm just saying, it's one of those old things that people kept and after it was no longer needed. Yes.
Thank you, Nancy. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Oh, boy. Mary in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hello. Two questions about Stollen.
Yeah.
One is it exclusively Northern Europe? And the other question, my dictionary from the 70s says something about symbolizing the Christ child swaddling clothes or something to that effect?
I don't know about. It is, mine is rolled up. I mean, that's a typical thing. You roll it out, put something on it, and then create a smaller structure. So I don't know about that, but yes, I'm pretty sure it's a Northern European thing.
Yeah.
So I grew up in Milwaukee with, you know, with Polish background, but there's a big German community there too, so I have no idea where it came from. It's just an old recipe, and it tastes wonderful.
Yeah, it tastes wonderful. Oh, thanks, Mary. Thank you so much. You can join in, too, 800-642-1234. Give a call. Carol in Madison up next. Hi, Carol.
Hi. I have a question about bread dough, and particularly the really wet, hydrated doughs that are so popular. I'm wondering if your guest has any easy tricks for working with them, because while I love the end product, I find the process really awkward and difficult.
So that's interesting, because the whole idea of them is to make it really easy, meaning that...
I find them sticky and gloopy, and
well,
everything is...
Yeah,
awful.
If you look at find the Mark Bittman, one of his books, or he did something on this for the New York Times years ago. The idea was you get a very, very wet dough, but you don't even knead it. You just plop it into your container, let it rise, and bake it. And I put it in a cast iron Dutch oven. So I hardly even get my hands into it. So that's the
beauty of it.
Yeah, and it's big, you know, you have big holes and little holes. It's got a certain structure. I don't find it a very interesting bread in a sense, because there's not a lot you can do with it. It doesn't last very long either, because it's, you know, mainly water and yeast and flour. But, yeah, it's meant to be very short also, short in time.
Yeah, I just made a scacciata, an Italian focaccia-like bread, and it called for multiple risings and handling, and it
Yeah. If you're making those kind of breads, yes, they're going to be messy. Your hands are going to get messy. Okay.
Yeah.
But this one step technique that some people have, where you just really put together your really wet dough, plop it in, it rises, and then you bake it. So you hardly ever touch it. It's just a variation on that technique. But very wet dough does get you a certain kind of bread, but it's messy.
Thanks, Carol, for calling. I want to go to pizza for a minute, because pizza crust, you've got some thoughts on pizza crust.
Well, I've taken bread, classes, and people in Italy would use double O Italian flour, which has got not a lot of gluten.
Yeah.
If you want to emulate it, you would mix all purpose and pastry. I mean, it's less gluten than pastry flour. But a lot of places, commercial, will use not just all purpose, but bread flour in their pizza dough. And to be honest, I don't know why they're doing that. It's easier to do. But these are professionals.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. You don't have to go to Italian double O, which you can get, get that if you want to try it. But why they're going to bread flour, I have no understanding. You know, it's called a pizza pie sometimes, meaning sometimes it's a flat bread. Sometimes it has some rise to it. Yes, it's got some yeast. But you don't want it to be really tough. So I don't know. I don't get that one.
And pies, I want to go back before we take a call. Apple pies, you have a little...
I don't understand the appeal of Granny Smith at all when you have so many other pies. And any pie that you'd make, I would think you'd want to have at least two apples in it. So Jonathan and Macintosh, a wonderful combination. Sort of firm and sort of not. Spicy, mm-hmm. sweet. Northern Spy, McCoon, Golden Delicious... They're all, Gravenstein, they're all these great apples, and people typically mix them in a cider, and you'd mix them in a pie. I mean, you don't want to put 10 in, but you can. But Granny Smith, I'm sorry, it's just,
No.
There are others.
Leslie and Tomahawk, your turn. Hi, Leslie.
Well, hi. I enjoyed the call from the gentleman talking about the Hoska.
Yeah.
And our Hoska recipe's probably been in the family for around three generations. And it originally, my great-grandparents lived in what was Bohemia, which became Czechoslovakia, which is now the Czech Republic. And it's exactly like he said. It makes a huge braided bread, fills your oven, wonderful. The nuts, it just has almonds and the nutmeg and raisins and just a delicious traditional bread. So I encourage anyone, if they ever come across a recipe, to try it.
Hoska, and it's spelled H-O-U-S-K-A?
The one I have is just H-O-S-K-A.
H-O-S-K-A.
Okay.
Yeah, and that may have changed over time.
Yeah.
And they also said to scald the milk, which I don't do.
Yeah. And it's interesting that there's almond in there, because that's a common ingredient in a lot of holiday breads. It adds sort of a little bit of denseness and moisture and protein. But again, you'll have to warn people about it if people have nut allergies. So I could have put almond in here, but I didn't.
Leslie, thank you.
Okay.
I appreciate the call. Patrick in Madison. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, thanks. I'm originally from northern Wisconsin, and I wanted to talk a little bit about pasties. That crust is similar to a pie crust. I found in the past it was a little bit hard to work with. I was over-kneading it or overworking it a little bit, and a friend of mine suggested that I freeze the lard the night before and then shred it in with like a cheese shredder.
That makes a lot of sense, yes.
Yeah, and I tried that and I had pretty good luck with that. And I just wonder if you had any suggestions on...
On pasties.
If you, for example, go to a British baking book for pasties, they will have a different kind often of pie crust. There's something called a hot water pie crust that they will use, which is tougher because it's meant to hold all those ingredients in and not leak. So it's, for many people, a different crust for a pasty compared to a fruit pie. So giving another idea for something to look at, a whole different kind of pie crust.
Yeah, interesting. Thank you, Patrick, very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Any cookbook recommendation that you have for listeners?
Well, I will. The British Baking from Paul Hollywood's very good. If you're interested in, there's a new one, The Rye Baker, all about rye breads. Everything is weighed. It's from a really European point of view. If I can get in one more little opinion here, it's French toast. French toast is pan perdu. It's made with old bread, lost bread. You do not use soft, sweet bread. You use somewhat purposely staled bread. And then you get the custard inside almost and the crust on the outside. So
there you go. Your last editorial for the day.
Yes, I got a lot of them in. Sorry.
Paul Novak. This is 28 years he and I have been doing a show together in the Christmas season. It's always great. He'll be back, and we will do it all over again. Well, tomorrow we're expecting a visit on this show from Santa Claus, and we'd like to hear from all the kiddies out there. You want to tune in for that. It's always a great way to get into the Christmas spirit. Thanks for listening. Stay with us.